You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The crew from India is back with Srikanth, Neil, Akriti, and myself, Darshini. We talk top four, end of season sales, Rogers versus Klopp, and a lot more. Welcome to another episode of the Indian AI Podcast. Right, guys, welcome back to another episode. It's, as always, a pleasure to have all of you on. Before we dig right into the agenda for today's podcast, I thought we'd first start off with a look back at the Burnley game. I wanted to get you guys' opinion on the fact that were y'all a teeny weeny bit surprised that Liverpool actually came back from behind to win against a lower-ranked team. We know what the world of football is talking about, Liverpool, right now. We are indeed the biggest conundrum in world football. You could say that easily about Liverpool right now. I'm going to come straight to you, Akriti, first. And, you know, considering our record against lower-ranked teams, considering the fact that we were one goal down and our performance was typical of signs that tend to take us to believe that, you know, okay, we are definitely going to lose this game. It was one of those performances. We came back and we won it. So, your thoughts on the Burnley game?
I was, just in a yes or no, I was surprised that we did end up winning it. But the point is that I was very indifferent to that game because it didn't really affect me that we came back to win it, because I feel like our performance was, I mean, for example, in the Swansea game, at the first one which we won, there was, you know, we did actually, it was that, you know, winning ugly and showing grit, showing some determination to come back, fight back. But in this game, I've just felt like, you know, there were two goals that were scored against the run of play. It wasn't as if Burnley were also excellent, but of course they were good. But at the same time, it wasn't even that they were, you know, they parked the bus, or they were defending in numbers. They were attacking, and we were just like, there was no creativity whatsoever. There was, Mane was absolutely isolated. He looked bright in the beginning. I just feel like both the goals that came, they were completely against the run of play. We were maybe decent for very small patches, but that was it. At the end of it, we, you know, 3 points, we'll take it in a very tight top four race. It matters a lot. But this performance, to be honest, I didn't care much for it because it showed nothing. I mean, it doesn't even help our record against smaller teams or help us, you know, build our morale against the problem that is these so-called small teams that do so well against us. I feel like, you know, Burnley could have easily got a point had, I think it was one of the defenders, Loughton or someone, who just, you know, who missed a really good chance at the end. So they could have really, you know, they could have got that point and it would be the same thing again. So, I mean, I was surprised that we did take anything from the game, but that was pretty much it. I mean, the only thing that was positive for me from that performance was Mignolet. I felt that he had a good game despite the goal. I think he was generally not about the saves, because usually his saves are really good, but I think he just showed a lot more confidence, and there were these couple of punches, and I know these are very small things to get excited about, but I thought he was good. And I also think there was this one block from Klavan somewhere, which was definitely a goal. So I think that was pretty much, those two were the only highlights for me.
Neil, I'm going to come to you for your thoughts on the Burnley game, but I would also want to ask you, I don't know whether you guys noticed how much the commentators kept specifying on the possession that Liverpool have, because everyone talked about how we were almost 90% possession the last time we played Burnley and we lost the game. And so there was constant focus on the amount of possession that Liverpool had as the game was progressing, and even more after Burnley scored the first goal. So coming to you, Neil, what are your thoughts on the Burnley game? Were you surprised, or did you expect us to hit back and win it?
Yeah, I think it was about time we won a game against the lower side team, because as you know, we've done it pretty well against all these teams in the first half of the season, when you can call Leicester, Hull, as Akriti pointed out, Swansea was one of the best game where you can say we grinded out a result. Then there was like wins against West Brom, Palace, Watford, Sunderland. So I think overall, especially in the first half of the season, we've particularly done well. So I was not particularly surprised. I think it was just a matter of time before we did well, or, you know, we found the right combination to play against these smaller teams, because, I mean, after Jan and Feb, you saw particularly a lot of results that we done poorly. So I think it was just about time. Talking about possession, yeah, I think we had a lot of possession through the game, but I think towards the tail end of the game, I think we particularly defended really well. I think that's the time when, you know, Burnley were constantly attacking us, and, you know, I think we defended really well, and they had the ball more. I think that was the idea, because I think we really needed to defend and, you know, hold on to the game. So yeah, but I think overall, I think it's just that, you know, when we concede the fourth goal, I think we come under a lot of pressure, but I think we did well, and probably we were just lucky, or the Burnley defense wasn't, you know, they made it. I think for the first goal, there was a mistake and the attack wasn't, you know, good enough. So I think everything counted and we ended up getting those three vital points.
Shree, coming to you, 3 points in the bag, a hard-fought, ugly game. Look past it, move on, and think about what's going to happen next. Your thoughts on the Burnley game?
I think, as others have said, maybe the result is something we have to wait and see, whether it's a one-off or whether it's going to be a trend. But I have to disagree with Akriti in terms of, I think there were a lot of things to take away from, especially one thing I felt, because I rewatched the game again, was how Liverpool consistently worked their way through the game. You could say that. I'm just going to take the Arsenal game as an example. So we know what Arsenal came to do. They were going to play a bit more direct, a bit more long ball, you could say, to maybe initially to beat the midfield press. But what happened was Liverpool striked early. And once you are already on the back foot, they knew if they had to come back to the game, they couldn't keep playing long ball. They knew only one way to play. They resorted to it. But with Liverpool, again, we stuck to a position. And then once they scored early, what we actually saw was, you could see we were trying to go direct. But the problem was, one, with Origi, he's not great at holding up the ball when he has to head it down to other people running who are making the runs on the channels. That was one. Another was, I think it looked like a mid-game strategy switch, and I think the players weren't ready for it. So we weren't ready to win the second ball. It almost looked like what it looked to us from when, if you watch it the first time, was Burnley got to every second ball. But if you rewatch it, it's because we were not ready to get to the second ball. We were absurdly bad in terms of positioning when we made the switch to go direct. We were still positioned as though we were going to play possession football, while the fact was we switched to go direct. But we continued to work things through the game. Small changes. Like in the second half, we didn't, what we did was we didn't hit, we didn't launch the ball. Or you could say we provided opportunity for Origi to chase the ball down rather than head the ball down. And once you get him into control where he can chase the ball down, he becomes far more effective in the game. So, and we also were ready to win the second balls. That's why the second half looks crappy, but we started dominating because we started expecting where the ball would go and we had the men to get onto the ball. And two goals had to come. I agree with Akriti. You could say that in terms of big chances created, Burnley looked to be dominating. But we have seen a lot of games. If we talk about missing chances, if we start talking about missed chances, then Liverpool should be top of the table. So we took our chances on the day. Now the key thing is going to be, we are not sure. See, there are going to be multiple tactics. This was a bit like a combination of a long ball tactic plus a Leicester game where they had a really speedy attacker who could run the channels. And that's a problem for it. We struggled against Vardy and we struggled against Gray because our line is so static and our midfield is so porous. It's so easy to beat the offside trap. And we saw that Gray got in repeatedly, and especially with Milner. Milner is so keen to step up. There are so many spaces being left behind. Now the key challenge is going to be, one, how many other teams are going to do this? Can we consistently do this? And if there is some other third type of strategy coming, which is neither long ball, neither direct play, neither counter-attacking, are we going to be able to work these things out throughout the game? That's going to be the challenge. So result, I would keep it secondary. I'm just going to see what we are going to do in the remaining 10 games with this.
Shri, I'm going to stay with you on the Burnley topic itself. You've vastly explained about the technical aspect and what you saw from the game and your thoughts of it. But from a psychological point of view, do you think this result was needed considering 2017 from the turn of the year hasn't really been good for us against lower ranked teams? So as a psychological perspective, what is your take on that?
I would say this becomes important. This result will be looked upon always in hindsight. It's going to be like if we start putting a run against, let's say, and just, I know we are going to look into fixtures going down the line, but if we start getting results against, let's say, Stoke or Crystal Palace or West Brom, then this result gets looked upon in a good light. But if we revert back to form, then this is always going to be treated as one-off. Remember, it was only a draw, but how many Liverpool fans still remember and talk about that draw where Liverpool drew against West Brom and celebrated? Because that kick-started a momentum, that kick-started a trend that Liverpool are never out of the game. And then we obviously saw a lot of games where we scored in the last 10 minutes in extra time. So the question is, this game will be considered important only based on what happens from now. So in that aspect, I would like to wait and see what this does.
Shri, you've taken us beautifully into our next section. Thank you very much for that. Akriti, I'm gonna start this with you. We have, looking at the remainder of the season, you could call it the final third of the season, if you may, and we only have a fixture against one top team, that's Manchester City. We've got a game against Everton after that. And apart from these two games, we are pretty much playing mid-table teams, bottom-ranked teams, lower-level teams, however you may want to call it. So we know what our ultimate aim is for this season. At the end of the season, as a club, as players, as the manager, as fan, we want to finish top four and make Champions League next season. How does the club go forward from here for the next fixtures, especially as a manager, especially as the players? What is it that we need to do to achieve our goal?
Absolutely, I was going to mention it if you hadn't, that it's, I mean, the one way this Burnley game could be very crucial is because all our remaining fixtures bar Everton and Man City are against these kind of teams which we struggle against. So to put it very simply, I think to what needs to change for us to, for us to finish with Champions League is, I mean, we Coutinho needs to start performing again. He hasn't been the same all year. He, since he returned from injury, he has scored one goal and he's gotten one assist in, I think, against, I mean, in not even the Premier League since he came back. So all year he's basically, I mean, it's been very poor since he came back from injury. It's not been the same. Lallana needs to start performing again. He was doing, I mean, he was doing fabulously well last year. And again, he has, his performances have dipped massively. He has no goals or assists to show. Firmino, he has also, I mean, he's had a pretty bad patch, but he looked really good against Arsenal. He got his goal and it's a shame he missed the last game. And you know, as we saw, Mane wasn't there. So we've missed, I mean, this, it's not a coincidence that when our strength was always our attack, when the attackers go missing, then obviously it's not a coincidence that our collective performances also drop, especially in a team where the midfield is not that good, the defense is not that good. So you kind of, I mean, even though you need some players to perform for the entire team to come together, it's not as if we have a lot of great players. We need some individual brilliance. So I just feel that since our attack is what, you know, it usually just gets the others out of jail, we need our attack to start clicking again. There has to be, I mean, we need those, we don't need moments of brilliance, although they would do, but we need to, you know, there has to be some cohesion. I just, like, I have to reiterate how isolated for a lot of time Mane looked against Burnley. So, you know, if Coutinho, and Coutinho has been completely off, and so has Lallana. I mean, we didn't see Lallana for the opening 20-30 minutes. These guys have to pick up for us to, you know, have a chance at finishing in the top. And also, I Klopp needs to be doing things differently. I mean, to be fair to him, he has a certain way of going about things. He likes to stick to how he has begun, and he has his halftime talks and whatever people pick up. But as fans, you want to see something different. You can't keep going at things the same way and expect different results. And we will come to, as you had mentioned in the opening remark, I'm sorry for going on a rant, but about Rodgers versus Klopp. So at least for me, when I saw Rodgers change things, it gave me, I mean, it freaked a lot of others out. But when I saw him go three at the back and then we got a 13-game unbeaten run or something around that, it was good. He at least, you know, he at least made some changes, made some drastic tactical changes. We lost a game and then we just stabilized, you know. So I want to see those kind of things as a fan. I feel like Klopp is a little, I mean, last game was also encouraging because we defended a lead well. We didn't go, you know, we didn't go gung-ho. But for me, yeah, I think maybe that is it. I think I've ranted enough, but I think our top attackers need to really pick up for us to have a shot at top four, because it looks really difficult this year.
It's a very interesting point that you made, Akriti, about Klopp's role over here in terms of changes in squad formation. I guess that's what you were trying to emphasize on, right? Like the way Rodgers changed the squad.
Yeah, because my point is that till the end of the season, our personnel will not change. We can't get more quality. I mean, we have to make do with what we have. So there has to be some sort of a change that needs to, you know, that needs to come in, and a manager would be the one to do that. I mean, if your players are not performing, your manager needs to try something different.
Neil, I'm going to take that point of Akriti's and come to you, asking you if you feel maybe we don't have enough options in the defensive part of our squad, or even the midfield part of our squad, which is why Klopp finds himself restricted to create these squad formations that Akriti has emphasized. That, as well as just your general thoughts on what the club needs to do.
No, I clearly agree with you there, because, I mean, you could see against Burnley, you know, when you just saw the substitute, I was like going through what's the lineup, and then I saw the substitute, I was like, what is this, like, benches? I think it's probably one of the worst benches we've had in a while. It was just like, I don't, like, there were like three or four young players, which is good. I think I was pretty impressed with Ben Woodburn's performance, but otherwise, you know, there's no player who can come in and change the game. Okay, Lucas came in the last 10 minutes, won a few headers there, which is pretty decent. But then again, you know, you don't have a game-changing player out there because, of course, a couple of them are out injured. Sturridge, you never know what is happening. We lost almost three. I think, apart from Origi and Firmino, there's Danny Ings who's been out all season. Sturridge is nowhere to be seen. I'm sorry, but I actually find it funny because I think his career is as good as over for us. So it was pretty, I mean, it was pretty sad to see. I mean, our bench was dire. And even you see Milner is not the ideal person to play left back. You know, it looked good at the start of the season when, you know, we were getting good wins, like 6-1, 4-1 wins, and the defense didn't have much to do. But I think he's been found out. You know, he's just too slow to play at left back, and there's no ideal replacement for him. Moreno is, I don't think Klopp fancies Moreno. So I think the lack of players, I mean, already where we, in a season where we don't have a European game or, you know, any European matches, we are struggling. So I don't know, I mean, what's going to happen next season if we, you know, don't have a good squad. So I think, yeah, I mean, that is there. I think Lovren coming back would hopefully stable the defense. I think Plavan's performance have been pretty average, but yeah, I think we have 10 games to get that Champions League place, and I think we have a good head start. I think 55 points is a good place to be in going in for the next 10 games, although the competition is pretty tight, but I think we have a good head start and I think targeting around 24, 26 points. 24 points, I think we'd be safe because the overall points, I think the top four could almost go to 77, 79 around, I think, this season. Last year was like 66. I think that's like 11 points further, but I don't think that's going to happen this year because all six teams are doing pretty well. And a lot of teams have game in hands as well. So I think we still have an advantage, I feel, because Arsenal have an FA Cup. I think Arsenal really need to win the FA Cup. So I think their focus would be to win the FA Cup. Manchester United will probably try to win the Europa League or, you know, at least go further in semi-finals or finals. So I think we're in a good position, I'd say, to finish in top four.
Yeah, Neil, it's so awkward when I look at the fixture list coming up, and in normal situations and normal cases for a team that's in, you know, in the top four with these kind of teams to play against, just one big team, one competitor, Manchester City, and maybe Everton to some extent being rivals, you would expect the club to, you know, get as many points as possible from a fixture list like that. But because of what has happened to us over the past couple of months, we actually don't have, as a fan, personally, I don't have that kind of belief right now that even with a fixture list like that, we are going to be capable of finishing top four, very, very honestly. I mean, that is what 2 months of ridiculous performances and ridiculous results against teams have done to me as a fan. Shree, coming to you, what is your thoughts on what Liverpool, especially from what I would want you to, you know, stress on, is Klopp's role majorly in ensuring that Liverpool get top four with whatever fixture list is left for the rest of the season?
Before we go into Klopp, one thing, if we rewind back to, let's say, June, once fixtures came in, what all of us were saying, August is horrible. If we can get a point or two out of August and then just ensure our morale doesn't go to, and then we discuss a month, then we say, oh, free run till Christmas. Then we have a slightly tough period. And everybody said, the home stretch is so easy. It's unimaginable. Look at other teams. Arsenal are playing Spurs. United are playing City like this. Chelsea are playing them. So many big fixtures. Liverpool have a free run. Imagine if we are in the title race, the last 10 fixtures. And imagine now we are in March and we are saying, the easiest fixtures for Liverpool are the next two, City and Everton. And then we have all the tough fixtures. That's
exactly, Shree. Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking as well. Yeah, spot on.
So that's become a problem. But leaving those things aside, few things we need to do. We need to somehow score first in every game. If we can do that, our record is pretty good when we score first. Okay, we might get the occasional draw, but a point is always better than zero. So one thing, if we look to score first, then somehow we seem to play like some a different team when we are in the lead. It's something I'm not able to put my finger onto it. So that is one. Two, also people did mention about, Neil talked about United. United have two chances, like how we were last season. They have the league route, they have the Europa League route. Looks like they will prioritize the Europa League. They are one of the, if not the strongest team left there. So that's going to be one. Spurs are without Kane, so we need to see how they can play without Harry Kane. Arsenal are in a slump. Usually this is the time which is when they get started. Suddenly there is, oh shit, we might miss on top four. Let's do what it takes to get to fourth. So this is their period, so it's going to be interesting to see. But all these teams have big fixtures. Let's leave out Chelsea. It's done. The title is done. So it's they are out of the picture. So it's going to be what the other teams do. Other things we need to consider is, let's say, I'm just looking at the fixture list. So we have teams like Crystal Palace playing us in late April. So we are talking, what, five fixtures away. This is Crystal Palace is six fixtures. For all you know, Crystal Palace could become safe by the time we play them. And teams which are safe in the last four or five games, they have nothing to play for. So it could be a game like, if Crystal Palace are in the relegation fight, it's a totally different game. While Crystal Palace, who are safe, have nothing to play for, it's a different game. Same with West Brom. West Brom have already started dipping because they racked in so many points. Now they have literally nothing to play for. They are almost safe. They have dropped off massively. So the West Brom game is going to be interesting. Last game, Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough are already in the relegation fight. If they are still in contention to save, that becomes a different game. And if they are relegated, it's a totally different game. So it's not only how we are playing, it's going to be so many factors are at play. Who is available, who is injured, who is available for the opposition. What is the position of teams like Bournemouth, Crystal Palace, Southampton. Southampton is going to be an interesting game because they have nothing to play. But they almost seem like they turn up for the big games. It's almost like they're so Liverpool in not only players, it's about even in attitude, they want to be like Liverpool. They turn up for big games, they forget about the other games. So there are so many other factors. It's going to be a tough fight, I think six teams, but I'm hopeful that if we get the lead in most of the games, I hope that we should be safe.
Right, Sri, and just staying with you, I also want to get your thoughts on the manager's role. You know, apart from just the players and the kind of teams that we're playing, his role in the remainder of the season.
Yeah, there was a reason why I didn't pick, because I don't know what he's going to change. He's going to play the 4-3-3. I don't see things changing. It's even in Dortmund, things went totally up to, inside the abyss. He didn't change. He has a system in mind. He has a way of playing. Maybe resources switch. I wouldn't mind Origi playing games. Yeah, he wasn't the greatest, but he gives us something which other players don't have. He gives us an option to play slightly differently, tweak the system in the 4-3-3. It's going to be interesting once Henderson comes in, what he does to the midfield thing. But that is the only point of interest. I think we are going to play 4-3-3. I would be very, very surprised if he changes, because his track record doesn't seem to suggest he's the one who's going to be tweaking in-game. I was quite surprised that he made a sub in like 59, 60 minutes. But I was also quite surprised he chose this game to make a sub in the 60th minute. Because remember, there was one game he said, I could have made a sub, but I didn't think there was anyone worthwhile bringing on. He's the one who made that comment. Then he's the one who's put out this bench. And he's the one who brought on play. So I don't know what to make of it. If he can bring Ben Woodburn now, I don't know why you couldn't bring a Ben Woodburn or someone equal and then. But he's responsible for putting this bench. He chose not to buy players. He chose not to play certain players. So it's all up to him. You could say there is no question of whether he was backed or not. He's the one who's chosen not to pay the money. And it shouldn't be the manager's call whether you want to pay that money. His call should be whether you want this player or not. How much money is to be played? Let the board decide. There is someone to do the job. Let them do that job. You do your job. That's why you have a sporting director. If you're going to have a sporting director and you decide what value you should pay, then why have a sporting director? It makes no sense. So it's his job to play the team, and I don't think he's going to make many changes. We are going to play 4-3-3. I think what we might see is more scrappy games, maybe players getting used to this kind of style where there's a fight. We don't dominate possession. We give away ball. I was actually talking on the tactics pod to Leroy, and I was suggesting that maybe Liverpool actually might lose the ball on purpose. Because once you hit the ball long, you lose the ball. The ball is it's like a free chance for you. You move the ball easily 50 yards into their half. Then you start counter pressing by losing the ball. You know you are losing the ball. It's almost like you charge with, you know the defender is going to build. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do things like that. We lose the ball on purpose. We purposely don't hold possession. Maybe those are the kind of internal tweaks to how we use the 4-3-3 changing. But in terms of formation, in terms of personnel, I don't see many changes coming. And the last bit, I think Twitter will burn tomorrow because somebody, most people on Twitter will be surprised that somebody is actually waiting for Lovren to come back.
Yeah, I was very surprised by that, Neil. But I guess...
No,
I guess
okay, if you had Klavan, yeah, I mean, it's either Klavan or Lucas or Lovren, so I think I'd always have Lovren over those two.
Matip, Klavan are unbeaten, I thought.
I would choose Matip.
I think the sample size is too small, I think. Maybe two or three games they've had.
With a big sample size, we know what Lovren's record is, though.
I can't wait to get, after hearing your thoughts on, what is it that Klopp can offer us for top four. I can't wait to get to the section where we compare, you know, we talk about Rodgers and we talk about Klopp. It's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get there, Akriti, coming to you, we've talked about nonstop, in fact, especially after, you know, our fall, our form has completely dropped. We've talked about reinforcements. We've talked about where we need to strengthen. We've talked about, you know, what kind of players we need to make us a complete team again. And yes, as fans, we know our defense needs to be strengthened. But what about players who will probably leave the club end of the season? We all know what's happening about Chan's contract issues. We know the deal with Sarko. We haven't seen Sturridge at all. So who are the players who you think we will see leave the club at the end of the season or, you know, the summer after the season gets over?
So the players I think will leave, not the ones who I want, but I think Sturridge would probably go. There's also a very interesting, I don't know if you guys have seen it, there's a very interesting article on Bleacher's Report about they've analyzed all the fall in, the fall and rise, the biggest fall and biggest rise in a lot of clubs. So in Liverpool, Daniel Sturridge's loss in value has been almost 20 million, obviously, considering all the injuries and everything. And still he's worth 25 million. So I think he will probably leave because he doesn't fit too well and everything else also. And I think Klopp prefers a different kind of a forward. So he's one player I think most of us feel would leave. And I think a lot of fans are also would be happy to see him leave because everyone likes him a lot. And, you'd rather see him get chances somewhere else. I think I have a feeling Mignolet will leave, although I quite like him in the second choice kind of a role, not as a first one for sure. Because I feel like, you know, if he's someone who can keep who can put some pressure on the other goalkeepers, because he is decent and he can come back in. When he comes in, he does really well also in those patches. So, but I feel that Karius would be the first choice from next season, and we may see other youngsters step up to be the second choice. So he'll probably be going. Chan, I'm not too sure about that, those Juventus rumors, but now he said he's happy also. It's all too confusing. I think Moreno is one player who has no future at Liverpool at all. I'm a little skeptical about James Milner's future because, as great a servant as he may be to football, he's getting older, and he would probably not, if Klopp looks to add a lot more in the summer and add more quality, then I think Milner suffers, and which is okay. I mean, you'd rather have a more energetic, none of us would want to see him play the fullback role because it's not his job. And in the midfield, our midfield is just too pathetic. We need a lot more quality, and we need to upgrade him. And Lucas, I think we can all wait till I think Lucas will probably become a player manager. He'll just, he'll keep extending his contract and he'll get into a, he'll become our player manager next after Klopp. So yeah, that's about it.
I'm not quite sure if anyone wants to see Lucas become player manager, Akriti. I honestly feel bad about, I feel bad for Studded simply because which team is actually going to take the guy, even if he does want to leave Liverpool? Like the number of injuries that has hit him in the past 2 years, and like you rightly pointed about his market value and stuff like that, who is really going to pay 25 million for Daniel Sturridge unless it's like, you know, a really much lower ranked team, you know, than Liverpool, of course. Coming to you, Neil, who are the players you think will be leaving this summer?
I think Akriti has pretty much mentioned everyone. So, I mean, who are most likely to leave? I think Sturridge is going to sign a contract with the hospital. So he's just waiting for the season. Season two.
That is so sad.
I mean, yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's just funny. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's, I think, yeah, I just find it funny because how easily he gets injured. I mean, I don't know what's wrong. But I think apart from Sturridge, I think Lucas would be the most likely to leave. And I think Milner, apart from, I think he's on ridiculously high wages. So I think if we find a team who, you know, who'd probably afford even 3/4 of his wages, I think, you know, we'd write it off. I think he's a good player. I mean, he can play everywhere. I think he's done decently well at left back, but for the long term, I don't think he should be part of the team. And maybe some fringe players like Connor Randall and maybe players like Kevin Stewart want to get, you know, regular football, then I think they should be looking for another club. So I think all those players, those 4 or 5 players most likely leave. Emre Can, I think he'll stay. I think, I don't know if it's about the wages or not. I'm pretty sure we can afford his wages if he can give Lucas about 70,000-80,000 a week, and I think he pretty much deserves it. So, I mean, I think he's young. He's a young player, and I think we should keep a player like him. You know, I think he has a quality to lead the team pretty well.
Well, I think Can, looks like Can is mostly staying from the most recent reports. But Milner, since you mentioned Milner and you said, you know, he can pretty much play in any position, this thought came to my head where, I don't know if you guys remember, but when he was at City, he actually played in I think a couple of games as a stand-in striker as well. So that is, you know, that is how a multifunctional James Milner can be, I guess. Shree, coming to you, who do you think will be seeing leave Liverpool?
I think Sturridge will go. I'm quite sure West Ham will bid. It's like they have 7 strikers, they want 8. If they have 8, they want 9. So they will bid, I'm quite sure. So you said lower ranked team who desperately needs a striker. I think West Ham with 7 strikers desperately need an 8. So I'm quite sure they will bid. So Sturridge is someone I see leaving. And I wouldn't be surprised if he actually scores 20 goals somewhere. And there'll be teams willing to pay money. We paid 11 or 12 million for him, if I remember. We took a gamble. We paid a moderate amount of success indeed. So I think someone will be able to gamble with him. So he would be someone who would go. I'm not sure what Neil is on today. One, he wants Lovren to play. Then he says Lucas will leave. I don't know. How can Lucas leave? Lucas will play for the next 70 years at least. He started as midfield. Now he's a centre back. Next he'll play goalie.
Goalkeeper.
Yeah, that. So, and we also need someone to motivate the Brazilians. We'll continue to buy. So I think Lucas should ideally stay. I don't see him leaving. I would be very surprised if that happens. There is going to be quite a lot of Moreno. It's going to be interesting. It's almost like he can't make a decision because he never plays. It's like he played so few games. We have not seen whether he's improved in training because we are out of the cups. He gets 15 minutes here or there. It's so tough to make a decision. And even if he leaves, I wouldn't be happy because I don't even know whether he's improved or not. How do you even make a judgment when you never see him? So it's going to be a tough call with Moreno. I wouldn't want him to go. But if he goes again, I won't be surprised. Midfield, there is no question of selling anyone. We don't have a midfield. So we'll have to keep what we have. So maybe some of the, I would say people who are in the under 23 for like last 3 years or something, they who deserve to get culled. There'll be a lot of loans, especially with the loan signings. I don't think anyone who's on loan is ever coming back. I don't see that happening. So there's at least 3-4 signings out there. So I think we'll easily sell 8 to 10 players again. The question is, what do we do in terms of incomings? Otherwise, I think everybody who's currently in the match day squad would continue to be there. Whether they will be indeed be starters, you hope some of them are nowhere near the starting lineup. That's what you would pray for. But it's like we have options, but we still want to play Milner somehow at left back. So it's almost like forced option. So it's going to be... See, there is a... I mean, how worse can Moreno play? That's what I want to know. It's like, what would it take? Maybe Milner scoring 3 consecutive own goals in a game. If that's what it's going to take for Moreno to get a chance, I would rather want to see Moreno. I would want to see it. Klein seems to be play. It's like Klein, what he does is it's a virtual reality. So it's like he transports himself from the previous game. He'll put himself as a virtual reality engine here. He will play the same thing. He will go up front. He will make a pass infield. It will not beat the first man. He'll come back, defend. He'll again go up. He will not beat the first man. So it's almost like it's a repetitive. It's like, remember people talk about this FM game where they do the simulation. This is almost Nathaniel Klein is a simulation. It's a repetitive simulation. He does the same things over and over.
There's the title for the pod. Nathaniel Klein is a simulation.
But it's a symptom of our team. We keep doing the same things over and over again. So there's no harm being, but it's just the Klein seems to stand out. But a lot of people keep doing the same thing over and Milner just keeps getting beaten over and over. So things happen. So there is need to be some changes. The question is, we literally will grind people down to death in terms of fullback positions rather than play. I don't know if any of you watched the under-23 games. Yes, it is under-23, but Trent Arnold looks like a modern fullback. He plays like one. He looks like one. Because the problem, advantage is he's been a midfielder. And then he's graduated to a defender. It makes so much of a difference in the way he plays. And it was outstanding that game. I would seriously suggest if you have not watched it, watch the game. He was outstanding in that game against Chelsea. So I would want to see these. I would want Gomez. I would ideally want to see Gomez playing as centre back. Moreno playing left back. Trent Arnold playing right back. It would at least provide it. We would at least know how bad we can get or how better we can get. I would want to know. The sameness is what will kill Liverpool.
Absolutely.
What about Marko Grujic, guys? You think he's going to go out on loan or do you think he...
I completely forgot about him.
We can't sell anyone in midfield. We don't have anyone in midfield to sell. So there's no question of selling.
Right. You don't even think like as a loan signing.
If we are going to be in the Champions League, we are going to need the squad. So I don't see Grujic is someone who's not played games because of injury. So you could argue that he's a potential, but he's shown potential in the very less amount of games he's played. He deserves a run. That's what I would say. Everybody deserves a run before you take a call. You can't just bin people or loan people without even knowing whether they. See, lots of people are outstanding in training, like Lovren seems to be, which is why he gets games. But Ledley King never trained because of his fitness, never permitted him to train, but he was outstanding in games. So unless they play, and games are so much different to what we do in training. So I would be interested to see players, give them a chance. If they don't perform, obviously you can always sell them for a loss, which we do. But let's give them a chance.
Sorry, I just like to interrupt. I mean, with 10 games in this season, I don't think there's room for error. I don't think there's time to give anyone a chance. I think we have to pick the best squad which is available, and rather than give chance and try out players. I know it's late in the season, but we don't have games where we can try it out. So
Neil, that's what I said. I said these are all what I want to see, but I did preface by saying Klopp will not change anything. We know he's going to play 4-3-3. We know there is only 13 members who are going to be part of the 11. We know all those. It's something I said which I would want to see. If you are going to bin all these players, you need to give them a chance to know whether they are good or not. That is just my opinion. But I'm quite sure Klopp is not going to give them chances.
And even if you look at it from the point of view of next season, to have Gomez in, to have Moreno it's going to be really difficult for us to probably even see these guys play next season, because I would assume Klopp would want to strengthen these areas with more experience rather than youth for next season. Like, if at all he is, hopefully, I pray that he is going to strengthen these defensive aspects of our squad for sure. Guys, just moving on from here onto a very, very interesting part of the podcast is we have all seen and witnessed in the Rodgers era how he was absolutely hammered and beaten down for playing players out of position. And there are like a number of examples that, you know, we can put against that, which is to start off with Chan at right back, and then of course Gerrard in that holding midfield role, which a lot of people thought was a genius touch, but there were some of us who didn't believe that it really was. Then you know, having Raheem Sterling start as a striker, even that was a problem for us at a later stage, I thought. So Rodgers has been given his life has been made hell by Liverpool fans, by pundits, for doing this constantly. He got a lot of criticism from us. But if we look at Klopp's game and we look at the way he has played players out of position, like, of course, James Milner, who's not a left back, but then James Milner also has played in multiple positions throughout his career. But is Klopp blameless? That is what we need to touch upon right now. Akriti, I'm going to start with you. What do you think about this whole situation?
Absolutely not. I think I've said it. I've said it a lot of times. I've also compared them a lot of times, much to other people's. I mean, I don't think they would have wanted to listen. But I spoke in the first segment itself about the, you know, about these two, about how. But he, I think, more than playing players out of position, my personal problem with Klopp is that he's just not trying enough like Rodgers did. Maybe Rodgers tried a little too much with when he started playing people out of position. But then again, you know, we saw him in some of those positions we did get results. For example, playing Sterling up top, then playing Lallana and Coutinho behind Sterling, and, you know, shuffling things. As far as playing people out of position, I think there's not so many, and there's not been those many drastic changes, like playing Chan at right back, which, you know, really get people's goat, making these drastic ones. The only drastic one, I think, has been Milner at left back, which everyone has gotten pretty accustomed to, especially since everyone has also made peace with the fact that Moreno is not that good and we don't have much, many options. So Klopp is left with no choice. But I think anyway, towards the end, Rodgers, the hate towards him got exaggerated, and at every level, whatever he did, it was a meme. So, and Klopp is right now a god, and it is out there. It is very obvious that, you know, they are like at completely opposite ends of spectrum. So people just don't view Klopp with that same light, which is fair. It's his, just his first full season. But again, I mean, Klopp is not blameless in a lot of ways. I mean, he shouldn't be, and people do tend to absolve him a lot, but I think that's also stopped off late. But personally, my issue is with him not doing things. I mean, play people out of position, play youngsters, just do different things, and, you know, then not expecting the same result makes sense. For me, it is just not doing enough. And I think being too obstinate to a point where it can be a little harmful. And we all know he is the Arsene. I mean, he has the Wenger approach, but he shouldn't be in the, you know, in that same trajectory in the negative way as well. So, yeah, I think I've elaborated enough. So, yeah.
Right, but it's because of this very obstinate nature that even Rodgers portrayed when he was manager, that he refused
definitely,
to change
yeah.
the system.
Definitely, definitely. And
which
I think
really pissed all of us off.
Definitely, I think both were I mean, both were obstinate. I mean, I think managers are. I mean, you know, you want to, and there's also a matter of ego, I think, to an extent that, you know, you want to get your result one way or the other, and you want to prove that, you know, my way is the right way or something along that. And for Klopp, it's not exactly, I mean, it's not doing so much harm. So it is fair for him to stick it out. And a lot of times, you know, he does get the result. So there is no reason for him to make these huge changes. All I'm saying is that, I mean, it's not, firstly, we can't really put them in the same light at all, because the perception is completely different. And one is this charming, charming man who, you know, has these amazing celebrations, and one is this man who got a teeth whitening thing done. So I think just, you know, in the marketing, that sort of a way, I may be getting off tangent, but I think people, you know, this Klopp is not beyond the same criticism, but he somehow just, he is at this point that it's very early, and he's just a really likable person. So I don't think people, you know, tend to keep these things in mind. And I mean, these things are not even coming up as much as they did at that time.
You're right. I guess a lot of it also has to do with the fact that Rodgers did get a lot of criticism about, you know, his tendency to pay players out of position after the 2013-14 season. And I think that also matters a lot in terms of why Klopp doesn't get a similar kind of treatment, or why he's liked more, or nobody really criticizes him as much as maybe we did for Rodgers. And I think with Klopp also, considering he comes from this whole background of having done, you know, wonderful things with clubs like Dortmund and Mainz. So there is definitely a certain amount of bias that is extended towards Klopp. Neil, I'm going to come to you and your thoughts on this whole concept of playing, you know, people out of position, etc., etc. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I think earlier in the season, Klopp had, you know, specifically said that, you know, he wants the whole team to be very flexible, and, you know, he wants, you know, just players to play in number of positions, you know, especially with Adam Lallana moving back into the midfield, and maybe Lucas Lever, there were games where he was moved to the center back. Genie is, you know, he played in a pretty attacking role when he was in Newcastle, but now he has to again play in a more deeper role compared to what he was, you know, what he's used to playing. So I think Klopp, he just wants the whole team to be flexible in general. And, you know, when things are working out, especially during the first half of the season, no one is, you know, pointing out at anything. I think it's the same with Rodgers. You know, Klopp doesn't, I think, randomly have a thought at night, okay, now I'm going to play James Milner at left back. I'm sure he's seen it in training, and I think he knows what he's doing. You know, I think it's more to do with what he knows, I mean, as about these players. I mean, of course, Milner being a right-footed midfielder, he's playing him at left back. So there, I mean, it's just not randomly that he's put him out there. You know, he must have seen something that, you know, which has deputed him in that position. So, of course, when things are working well, no one is going to say anything. But once things start, you know, falling apart, that's when the criticism starts. That's human nature. So, I mean, of course, ideally, I would like players playing in their best positions. That's how all the top teams do. I don't think there's any team, like, I'm not sure of any examples yet, but I think if we get a good left back and a good additional center midfield, I think we'd be good to go. And, you know, we wouldn't have to play players out of position. So I think reinforcement in the summer would ideally help. And, you know, not having to play players out of position, what I'd go with.
Right, Neil. I think for me, it's more about a case of I'm actually quite all right with players playing out of position. I think if you look back at how Klopp managed Dortmund as well, he had a lot of players who had qualities and who had skills that overlapped with one another. You know, like if you take Arturo of Mane and Coutinho and Firmino and stuff. Like, I like that these guys have that versatility towards their game. I actually like that you can't put them in, they don't have fixed positions. I actually like that about our attack. But what I don't like is, I think there are certain positions in a football team that you need specialists for. So for me, defense is that entire defensive, the back four is a space in any football league, from, in my opinion, where you need a specialist, you need someone who is meant for that position. I just don't think you can play around with positions over there, with players over there, simply because, and even more because, you know, our game is such that if we lose the ball, we lose the ball in dangerous positions because of the kind of game that we play. And we need specialists. We need people who are meant for those roles, like a left back, like a right back, like your two center backs, like a left center back, like a right center back, not even a left center back for a right center back. You know, I just think that these roles are really, really important and we need specialists for these roles. And this is something that Klopp will really, really need to address for the summer, because I have no problem with the way he plays our attackers. It's just for me, defense, that is a big question over here. Shree, coming to you, I know you have a lot to say about this. So please go ahead, break loose, vent it out.
First things first, when we talk about Klopp and Rodgers, one thing we did explicitly mention was the track record. Obviously, Klopp gets far more leeway because he's proven it with the system. He's proven that he can win leagues. He's proven that he can go fight with the best teams in the European level. So, obviously, his leeway is going to be far more than what you would give someone like Rodgers, who's an unproven manager. If something comes up unexpected, it's good. But your basic expectation levels are going to be different. And one perception I had with Rodgers when he kept changing things was, this is just my perception. Obviously, I wouldn't know whether that was how it was intended to be. When he kept changing systems, I wasn't quite convinced he had the vision, end state vision of what he was looking to achieve with that. It was like, okay, this didn't work, so let me change. If this works, let's hold on to it till I get found out. Or can I? What he would do, what I felt was back there, he was in intermediary stage where he was trying to fix things. It was literally running on autopilot. You keep doing things, you'll try to fix it in the intermediate, and then let's try to go back to our original base system. But the problem was the three at the back worked so well, there was no it's almost like people say you never fix something which ain't broke. So he was so reluctant to make such changes that the back three kept playing until they started getting found out. So the for Rodgers, the problem has always been he kept changing without maybe not identifying what he wished to achieve with that change. While with Klopp, it almost seems like if he changes to something, he doesn't believe he'll be able to execute the vision of how he wants his team to play. His vision seems to be clearly executable with this set of players in this formation. And that is a weak point. It isn't a very strong tactical system when it can only work with certain 11 players who need to be played in certain positions against certain opposition. That is too many filters applied for it to be a base tactic for me. This is just a personal opinion. So obviously we need to get quick. And I'm okay with players being played out of positions. Ultimately, playing out of position, when would you do? You ultimately want to cover up your weakness or you want to enhance your strength. But ultimately, playing someone out of position is a compromise, which means that your team needs to compensate for that. Neil talked about not many teams playing. Victor Moses isn't a right wing back, but he is able to play right wing back because of how they are set up. They have a midfield too who can spread and cover up the spaces left behind with the wing back. He isn't traditionally very attacking when you compare to Marcus Alonso, who's used to playing that position. So he's far more aware of his duties so that he can attack. David Luiz has no credibility to play as a defender. He knows nothing about defense, but he looks to be so excellent because of the two players besides him. That is what I mean when the other team members can compensate in a way they can minimize your weakness or enhance your strength. Then that's what we did. Nobody complained about Milner initially. Why? Because the team found out a way to accommodate Milner and still play well. So, till you are able to compensate, now what everybody, from day one, we knew that we lacked width on the left. Because Coutinho always prefers cutting in, Milner knows only to cut in. Day one, we lacked width, and Klopp's teams cannot work with width. That is a known thing. Because if you are going to do gegenpressing, there is no way your players can be far from each other. When you need to work in a cohesive unit, you obviously have to narrow the space between your own players. That is when you can press easily. Otherwise, you will be easily beaten by a single pass or a move off the ball. So, that's why if you see, there is so much crowding in the midfield because we are set up that if we lose the ball, we can immediately press. So, the only actual width can come from fullbacks, and we need proper fullbacks. But Klopp's strength has been to improve, you could say, below average players to look great. Nobody would be talking about Lukas Piszczek now if it was not for Klopp. There is no way anybody talks about Piszczek. He made a pretty ordinary player into look one of the most feared fullbacks. So he has a track record of improving players. He has a track record of putting players in certain positions. Question is whether our team has the caliber to compensate those players being played out of position. That is what we need to discuss. And it is something which is he's to be blamed. Again, I'm coming back to the same point. He's chosen not to strengthen the team. He's chosen to be happy with the players he's been provided, or he's been happy that he's convinced that he's seen something maybe which none of us see, that he's convinced that Lucas can play center back. He's convinced that Lovren can be first choice. He's convinced Milner should play left back. He's convinced that Nathan and Klein can be literally ground to death, but he should still play as a miniature version. Even if he just gets wore down, he should still play. So these are all his choices. But on the other end, you could say he's had the track record. He's even in Dortmund, though he had a bigger squad, he always had a preferred set of players he always used. And then after 3-4 years, obviously those players were just exhausted playing the system. That it's half of their careers are done. If you play 4 or 5 years under a Klopp's regime, it's almost like playing 10 years of your football career in those 5 years. That's how much it takes out. It's not only physical, it's mentally draining, emotionally draining. It takes out so much out of you. So question is, obviously, we'll need, with Klopp, especially Klopp's previous track record suggests he has a long reign in clubs, which means that we have to frequently keep freshening up our squad. We are looking, okay, we are building a player. Oh, he's going to be our player for next 7 years, 8 years. Especially if we are talking about midfielders and attacks, I don't think it's going to work, because I don't see anyone surviving 3 seasons, maybe, or 4 seasons max under this regime. It's a punishing regime, and we constantly need to keep evolving as a team. So in that way, I think short-term fixes are to be made. We need to be playing players out of position. There's no wrong. But again, coming back to the point, is our team good enough to compensate those weaknesses? And currently, they are not. That's why we are getting shown up so easily.
So coming to a statement that you made, Sri, which for me stood out a fair bit, is you play players out of position to either enhance your strengths or to cover up a weakness. And sticking with the comparisons that we are making with Rodgers and Klopp, do you see an either or? Do you see that, maybe it was more about fixing and it was more about covering up weaknesses with Rodgers, while with Klopp it's a case more about enhancing strengths? Like, would you put it that way?
I'm not quite convinced, especially with the Milner switch. I'm not sure, because if you want to play as this system, especially, Milner hasn't shown any traits that he can be a viable component of this. He's not great in cutting infield. His crossing is terrible. So he's not shown any attribute which can enhance the... Tell me, honestly, what has he contributed to the attack? Let's leave alone Klein. We know he doesn't. But we knew he doesn't from ages. With Milner, Milner's primary job, you could say, he was played at left back. Maybe he's a midfielder again who switched back. He can contribute maybe to the attack. But what has he contributed? Nothing. Has he contributed to defense? No. So why wouldn't you play someone like Moreno, who's equally bad at defending? But we know he has pace. We seriously lack pace. We know that. We've been talking about it for like 12 to 18 months now. We seriously lack pace. Moreno has the ability to hug the line and stay wide. He has the ability to cut infield. We have seen his first goal. It came out of nothing. He was near the touchline and he just drove inside directly and scored. So he has traits. He brings an unpredictability, and that is something we need to do. We need to be unpredictable. It's almost we come to the other end of Rodgers. Where Rodgers, we worried. When we say the same shit every day with Rodgers, like, okay, what new formation are we going to play today? How many players are going to play out of position? With Klopp, it's almost the sameness which is killing. So in terms of that, I think it's not about, with especially the James Milner switch, I assume that it was to enhance our attack, but he's not shown any traits where it was worthwhile sacrifice to give up your defense, that the net positives in terms of attack hasn't occurred with respect to him. with respect to Lucas, I don't know. Maybe Lucas is good aerial. The only thing I know why we played Lucas is, especially games where we wanted to build from the back, him being a midfielder, his position, his ability to pass the ball from the back was an advantage. Right. But again, is it a net positive over his absurd defending? No. That's what you have to work at when you're talking about minimizing strengths or enhancing weakness. Obviously, if you're bringing in a player out of position to enhance your attack, you're obviously going to compromise on your defense. Is it a net positive factor overall for the team and for the player? That is what we have to work on. And the problem for Liverpool, I think, is the net positives haven't occurred with respect to playing players out of position.
Guys, we're going to quickly head on to the last part of our podcast. We're running a little bit out of time, but today is the 125th birthday of Liverpool Football Club. And so on this occasion, there's one question that I want to ask you guys, is, I'm going to start with you, Akriti, first. Is, so we know Arsenal won the league the year they were the Invincibles by not losing a single game that season. And we know, of course, that United have won the treble. We know Chelsea have won the league with the most number of points accumulated ever, which is 95. And, of course, our beloved club has won the Champions League 5 times. So, which record out of all of these do you think is the least breakable? I'm going to start with you, Akriti.
Yeah, I think all of these accomplishments are amazing. I mean, I'm starting off in a cliche way, but I think in today's, you know, modern day competitive football, I think probably winning the league without losing a single game would be probably the most difficult out of these. I think all of them are, but I think this one would probably be the most difficult one, in my opinion.
I agree with you, actually, Akriti. Coming to you, Neil, your choice.
Sorry, I just have one doubt. Is the LFC winning the Champions League 5 times, is like, will another English team, you know, go past that? You know, winning the Champions League,
yes,
you know, equal,
yes,
that record. Okay, another English team. Okay, I don't know. I think pretty much it's a combination of Chelsea winning the league with the most number of points and Arsenal winning the league without losing a game. Because I think it's pretty difficult to, you know, amass those points with regards to how competitive the Premier League has become. Last season, you saw how Leicester won the league, you know, as such. I think, What was the, I think 78, 70, something like that. I'm not too sure. So I think it's pretty difficult for any team to reach 95 points unless Chelsea can win all their games this season.
Can't think about winning the league without.
No, but also anymore. I think all of these are like, you know, I mean, pretty good feats, because I think Manchester United have like 3 Champions League, but then you don't see them winning the Champions League again, like 5 or 8 years, 10 years down the line. So it just, or any other Premier League team, in fact, because I think it's compared to the other European teams, or, you know, teams like Bayern or Juventus or Atletico or Barcelona, I think the English teams are still way, way too far off to, you know, win the Champions League again. So, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty surprised how good Leicester are doing. But yeah, I think all of these are like pretty good things. So, they're pretty good records. But I think the first, I think Arsenal winning the league and Chelsea winning, Arsenal winning the league without losing a game and Chelsea winning the league with the most number of points, I think are the two most.
And Liverpool is not making it any more difficult for teams to for another English cup to like not win to win the Champions League 5 times or more, because, you know, we don't play Champions League football. Coming to you, Sri, your choice.
On a serious note, I would agree that it is Invincibles. It's pretty much, you can rule it out, it happening with the way league works, with the way the money is equally distributed. I think it's just not possible that any team can win the league unbeaten. It's so in that way. But on a lighter note, I think the combination of Arsenal making it to the group stages 20 years in a row and getting knocked out in round of 16 so many times consecutively, I think that would not be beaten.
Yeah, and now that Leicester have made the quarters, it's just even worse for Arsenal. Right, guys?
I'm just looking. 2010 onwards, they've not crossed the round of 16.
And they've not got knocked out before round of 16
also. That's the beauty. It's not like they get knocked out in the group stages. It's exactly the round of 16.
It's almost a mentality now.
No, it's also, it's a great numerological sign. It's like 4 square is 16. There's so many things working out there.
Right, guys. So I'm afraid we will have to end the podcast over here. It has been an absolute pleasure having all of you on as always. And I would like to thank you for coming on tonight, and thank you to all our listeners for tuning in. And as always, we'll be back very, very soon.
Network.